I'm David James, and this is To Main Street on WNIN-FM. Our guest is a former TV news anchor who has worked at more than one local TV station. I was her co-anchor for years at WFIE, and we are both now retired from the daily grind of the TV news business. Ann, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing some of your cherished retirement time. You seem to be enjoying yourself.
I love it.
So what did you do on your first day of retirement? Do you know?
Well, I slept most of that weekend. You know, my last day was on a Friday, and I really slept. I think the anxiety of leaving, the excitement of starting something new. And then on Monday morning, I woke up and didn't even think about the station or anything else. We just got busy planning our next trip, and we took a nice long one, too.
You and your husband, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Joe. Uh-huh.
Where'd you go on your first trip?
We went to California.
Oh, mm-hmm. Road trip?
Road trip with the dogs.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's a long drive.
It was, but it was fabulous. There's so much to do on the way that we had never been able to take the time to do. As you well know, many years in our business, we weren't allowed to take more than a week off at a time. So that really limits where you're going in a car.
Well, yeah, in the TV business, you have rating periods.
Right.
And you could not be off rating periods.
No, you couldn't even die.
No, you couldn't. No, that was not allowed. You couldn't be sick or die during a rating period.
No.
So you had time and to do your thing. Mm-hmm. Did you see the world's largest ball of twine or anything like that?
No, we didn't bother with that. I don't think that was a dog-friendly attraction.
Well, maybe. You know, my first day of retirement, I don't know if I've told you this or not.
No.
I was called for jury duty.
Oh.
On my first day of retirement, and I was called in the jury pool, and I thought, well, you know, I've been called before, but they'd never seated me because I was in the media. And the attorney said, you're retired now. And I said, this is my first day of retirement. So they seated me on the jury. So my first 2 days of retirement, I had to go to the courts building and sat on the jury. So, yeah. So that was cool. Well, now we also share some great memories of what we call the golden years of local TV news. There were only a handful of channels then. That's before cable and the internet. And people watched the news at dinner time and stayed up late to watch the weather with Marcia Yockey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely changed now. We have all of this information out there. It's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
Are you still a news junkie?
To some degree, yes. I find that, like everybody else, I get most of my information on the internet, but I do watch the news, and I do I don't miss being a part of it. I like being a true spectator to it rather than being out there. I don't know about you, but every time it snows, I have a big sigh of relief that I'm not out there covering something or trudging to work in it. So there's a certain relief in watching the news. Do you feel that way too?
Well, now I'm working part-time at the radio station, so I'm getting back into that anxiety.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. It's, you know, we'd always have these snowstorms, and we'd have to be there no matter what. And so I don't know how we got to the station sometimes. I don't either.
Well, I do remember one time. I literally lived near the station, and I had to walk in the ice and snow. Oh, you know, you shake your head now. How did I do that?
Well, every once in a while, if we knew a big storm was coming, they'd put us up in a hotel overnight.
Right.
And then somehow we had to get to the station from the hotel in the next morning.
Hope for a taxi or that our cars would work or whatever. I had to take a taxi to the Upstage Dinner Theater fire. Remember that?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I couldn't get any of the cars started in the parking lot. Not one of them would start because, you know, it was just icy cold.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I didn't, you know, there was not a car there to jump one car to the other. So I called a taxi, and he took me to the Upstage Dinner Theater fire, and I made him wait while I and the old Scoopic on my shoulder, you know. And
well, we'll have to explain to some of our younger listeners what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Upstage Dinner Theater was an older building.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
Was it like a lodge or something? At one time, they converted it into a theater, and they had productions there, and they had food and liquor, and it was a fun place. It was a very nice
and
location.
A bar. There was a bar.
Yeah, and it burned, and it was like one of the coldest days in mm-hmm. history.
Yeah, literally, the fire hose was frozen. Remember the stream in midair was ice falling to the ground. The hoses were covered in ice. I don't know how they fought that fire.
It was horrendous. And I know the firefighters, McCurdy Hotel was right across the street.
Right.
So they would go in there and warm up. And, of course, we did too, the reporters, trying to get some feeling back in our fingers and toes. But that was a mess. That really was. Now, it's a 24-hour news cycle now. And
maybe we ought to explain what a Scoopic is, too. Well, that was a film camera.
Yeah, we did shoot film. And thank you. We did shoot film in the old days. My gosh, yeah. Oh.
And then to go back to the station. And you know, at the time, that was really early in the morning. I had nobody there to help me do that. So we had to, what we call, soup our own film, you know, develop it.
Yeah, now, I mean, everything's instantaneous. It's all digital. Mm-hmm. But then we had to shoot the film, bring it back to the station. It had to be run through the processor, for what they called it now. I forgot the name of it.
Yeah, I forgot the name of it, too. We had a little dark room.
Had a film chain, had to go through the chemicals.
Yeah.
And then it would come and have to dry. And then we had to
edit it,
reels, and edit it with glue that never would
so
stick.
Never stick. Never.
Film would break on the air. Yeah, those were the good old days. Man, I remember a film breaking on the air.
All the time. And then the sound that it was awful.
And also, as we go back in time, we had slides that we used for visuals, too. And there'd be thumbprints on the slides that we put on the air, and that was hideous.
Lots of screaming and yelling for the thumbs.
Anyway, how did you get your start in the TV business, Ann?
Well, I know you've heard this story many times.
Oh,
but
I loved hearing it.
I was on my way to, I wanted to go to law school, but I was in college and I had to work my way through college. So luckily, a nice guy named T.O. Donovan at a Henderson cable station gave me a job running camera, sweeping the floors, you know, that kind of thing. And the summer went by and I was pretty happy with that job. It was, you know, fairly close to home. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, Ann, there's a opening. You'd probably make more money at Channel 7 than the ABC affiliate. And he said, you know, you'd make more money. I hate to lose you, but, you know, I mean, how much skill does it take to run the...
How old were you then?
Probably
you
17 or 18
really?
Years old at the time. Maybe older than that, maybe 19. Anyway, I went to Channel 7 thinking I was applying for the same type of job. You know, running cameras, sweeping floors, studio kind of production. That's not what I was applying for. I was applying for an on-air position. And I got the job that day, and I said, oh, I don't think I can do this. They were very kind. They tried to train me. I'm not sure how good a job they did, but they tried to train me. And so I did the morning cut-ins for... get this, AM America with David Hartley and I've forgotten her name, the redheaded who did the commercials with Jim Garner. Anyway.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know who I'm talking about?
I know
about?
You're talking about. I can see your face and everything. By the way, we're talking to Ann Comas, former TV news anchor, my former co-anchor for many years at WFIE. So, Ann, okay, you were started at 7.
Right.
Okay, the ABC affiliate then.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there for how long?
8 or 9 years.
Really?
I think, yeah.
And then you ended up where?
25.
You ended up at 25.
EHT.
Across the river.
Right.
Okay. Was that, was that a planned move or were you?
No, I had quit 7. Mm-hmm. You know, that was when Charlie Woods was there. It was a very uncomfortable situation. But, you know, anyway, so I quit there.
Yeah, well, let people know when new people come in to different stations, it's a whole new dynamic.
It really is.
It can change the whole culture of what you're doing. And sometimes you just don't fit into that culture and you move on. And of course, in the TV business, people have moved on many places in their careers. And we were very fortunate to be able to stay in our hometown area.
We really were. You know, when you think about it, you know, oftentimes you look on the air and you see people and it seems like the next day they're gone. We didn't really have, and that wasn't just true of us, David. That was true of our reporters. Reporters and management and so many things. Yeah. So then I quit. I went to work months later at 25, and I was there about 2 years, I think. I'm not good at keeping track of time. And then I went to 14.
You came over to the good side.
Yes. To my
definitely.
Friends.
There you go. Yeah. Well, we have definitely enjoyed our time together at 14. A lot of characters there.
My gosh.
Well, characters are in every TV station. And I think that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah. And fun to come to work. Yeah.
I always said that the kind of the flotsam and jetsam of society end up in the media business. And, you know, I raise my hand. I'm one of them.
Me too.
So who were some of your TV news idols? When you were starting in the business,
gosh,
you know?
David, I don't know. I mean, I tried to watch, I tried to learn the business because although I had taken communication classes in college, that's not the same as actually working, especially back then. You know, you didn't have on-air facilities. You didn't learn how to put a package together, those kind of things. So I guess what I did was I watched a lot of TV. And the one person I actually picked up the phone and called one weekend was Jessica Savage.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually talked to me and was very encouraging. You know, there were women in the business then. It's not like, you know, I was the only one. Mm-hmm. But it was just so great to talk to another woman who was, you know, in such a high position, and I had a lot of respect for her.
And she tragically died in an auto accident,
yeah,
didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Well, we are talking to former TV news anchor Ann Comas, and coming up, Ann's going to share her love of horses and other critters with us. We'll also talk more about the news business, what happens when you're out in the field covering the news in the cold, the bitter cold. Also, we're going to talk about Ann's Greekness. That's not geekness, but that's Greek, G-R-E-E-K. And also Ann's role with Race for the Cure. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. This is 2 Main Street on WNIN-FM, and our guest is Ann Comas, retired news anchor at WFIE-TV. Ann, you have a great passion for creatures, big and small, I know that. First, let's talk about your love of horses. I know, an equestrian. And
well, yeah, I rode American Saddlebreds. I would show at a very, you know, there's something called the World Championship, which is in Louisville every year in August. I never quite made it that far, but I did love horses. My parents were very worried about me. You'll get a kick out of this because I was so shy. So one of the things they wanted me to do was to encourage these endeavors. Well, I just want a pony that would stay in the backyard and I could pet 24 hours a day. Their idea was to get me out, get me in competition, get me among people. And I guess it worked because I don't think I'm shy anymore.
No, I wouldn't describe you as shy. You know,
but yeah, I loved riding horses and I met some of the greatest people in that business. Still to this day, thanks to Facebook, I can still stay in touch with them. And every once in a while, I go out and ride just to get back in the saddle again.
Very good.
I love my horses.
Now, I've met several of your dogs over the years.
No, you've been forced to, haven't you?
Some have even visited the TV station
when
we were working, especially Baxter.
Yes.
And I know the beloved Baxter.
Oh, I love Baxter.
A poodle.
Standard poodle. Great dog. So, you know, poodles have such great personalities. He loved to play hide-and-go-seek. And in the mornings, you know, when we were free from work, he went on all my my little errands with me. He would go through the drive-in at the bank and so forth and became somewhat popular with the people of the time because they'd say, "Is Baxter with you?" And they'd have a treat for him. So, but tragically, Baxter has passed now.
Well, I know when Baxter would come to the station, I know one time I got a chance to try to hold Baxter. It's like trying to hold the reins of a horse. Baxter was a very strong dog.
Yes.
Would pull me down the hallway. But yeah, Baxter was quite. Didn't he bark at somebody at the station?
Yes, and I think he had an accident on somebody's shoes once.
Oh, well, we won't go into that. Yeah. We'll keep Baxter's memory very clean there. Now, okay, you grew up in the Henderson, Oakland City area?
Well, actually, I grew up in Evansville, moved to Henderson when I was the summer before my senior year in high school.
And where was high school?
Henderson City Flash. Yay!
Oh, Henderson City, which is no longer there.
No longer there.
There you go. The Flash. Okay. A flash in time. Okay, I'm sorry, interrupted
so
you.
So then...
By the way, we're talking to Ann Comas, former TV news anchor at WFIE, and this is 2 Main Street. Ann, go ahead.
Well, several years after that, while I was in Henderson, I moved to Oakland City to live on my aunt's farm there. That's A-U-N-T, A-N-T.
Oh, well.
My aunt's farm there. So I stayed there for some time.
Yeah.
And then moved back to Evansville. It was just too long a drive.
And did you go to North High then?
To North High, and my senior year went to Henderson City.
Okay. And the North High is no longer there either, the one you went to.
Oh, no. They got rid of all my schools.
Oh, yes, indeed. We have a new North High, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, my daughter went to the old North High, too.
You went to Bossy.
I went to Bossy. That's right. Bossy's still there.
Yeah.
Same location. It's hanging in there. Now, your Greek heritage.
What about it?
I don't know. Well, you always talk about baklava and all the Greek and things wrapped in grape leaves and stuff like that. So I assume you have some Greek heritage.
I do. My father was Greek. My grandfather came to this country from Greece. In fact, you know, when you talk about immigration and all that stuff, I my mind always goes to him because I never got to meet him. But his story is one of hardship and success. To come over back then, you had to have a sponsor in this country who would make sure that you have a job. And
would this be around the turn of the century then?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what year. Mm-hmm. But he came over. You know, this we're not talking about a wealthy person by any means. He'd saved and saved and saved, and the family gave him money as well. He came over. The sponsor was not there to meet him at Ellis Island.
Oh.
So he had to go back. This happened on the third time.
So to get back on the ship and go back to Greece.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
This happened, and on the third time, the sponsor was there, took him to Missouri, where eventually he opened his own little gas station restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was just such a character. So although I didn't know him, so much of what I have heard about him through my father, and my father continued many of those little traditions, and my father made sure that, you know, I was surrounded by Greek, so I understood that part of my heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear about baklava, the things that I have decided to carry on are the food items, the garlic around the neck to protect me from vampires and a cold.
Darn it. I was hoping we'd go there. Now, this baklava, and you'd bring it to the station.
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly is baklava for people that don't know?
Well, it's a phyllo dough, ground nuts, generally walnuts, mm-hmm. and honey syrup.
Very sweet.
It is.
Very sweet. What are some other Greek recipes that you...
I make a lot of. We made cookies. My dearest friend growing up, Yana Lahanas Navarre, now who lives in California, came in and spent some time with me. So we, rather than go out to eat, we stayed in the kitchen and cooked, and it was just like the old times. For people, especially police officers in the 60s and 70s, will know the Lahanas home. Because their kitchen and their home was always open to not only police officers. John Lahanas served, Lahanas cleaners, Sam's cleaners, mm-hmm. served on the Police Merit Commission. So the home was always open to police officers, especially on that late shift, which, as you know, we were on the late shift.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always food in that house. They were always feeding. They were always having big doings. So Yana and I, over Christmas, got to kind of recapture that.
Oh, moment. I bet those some great memories there.
Yeah,
great,
we were.
The aroma, I can almost smell all the olive oil and the garlic and everything. Oh, yeah, that's great. Now, being on TV, a female on TV, females are scrutinized for their appearance and hair, their makeup, their clothing. And did you ever get any of that?
I sure did.
What did these nice people say about you?
Well, you know, I think, honestly, the worst thing came from my husband, Joe, who called after one newscast and said, "Your hair looks like a cheap wig."
Well,
I kind of paid attention to my hair a little more after that.
Well, okay. It's better to hear it from somebody.
Maybe.
That's,
I don't know.
Well, I don't know either.
I'm still thinking about that.
Yes. So now, you know, every once in a while, we would actually coordinate with our clothing. That we didn't call each other, did
no,
we?
No.
But we'd show up in same colors, same patterns, and that was just really weird.
Yeah, we've been together too long
at
that point.
Yeah, sometimes that would happen. I go, my goodness. No, we did not consult each other.
No.
Speaking of consultants, we've had some consultants over the year in the TV business. And your impression of consultants?
Well, I think there was good and bad. Yeah. I really do think there was good and bad. I think the unfortunate part is that consultants often have more than one station in more than one region. And they often don't understand the market, and who could expect them to, the history and the makeup as, you know, we grew up here. So we have I think we had a better understanding than they did of what people would expect. And, you know, that to me, that was kind of the beginning of that vanilla look of all newscasts. And, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I just think it all goes into a circle. It really does. You know, there for a while it was happy talk. They wanted the news people, on-air people, mm-hmm. to be jovial and kind of kid each other
right.
and everything and kind of fill the gaps with happy talk. And then all of a sudden that was out the window. Nobody wants to hear happy talk. You know, they want serious, hard news, just the news, ma'am. You mm-hmm. know, that's it. That's all we want. And then it kind of goes around again. No, you guys are too serious.
Yeah.
And I know the poor weather people, they go through that too. You know, they want them to be personalities.
They really get it worse than we did.
Yeah, and then they want them to be scientists.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then they want them to be something else. So mm-hmm. it just would go in a circle like that. And it's kind of maddening in a way. But I guess these consultants study the demographics and they have their focus groups and they decide what the majority of people like.
Like, yes.
So, but... Anyway,
but it all begins kind of vanilla.
Yeah, but we know what's right.
Yes, we knew much better.
That's right. We certainly did. Yes, and we would often say that too, didn't we?
Yes.
As much to their chagrin. Oh well. Anyway, I remember one time. It was just a normal day, and I was going to do the afternoon show or something. I was doing one of the shows, and I slipped on some rainwater.
Oh no.
That seeped through a skylight at the station.
I knew you were going to tell this story.
And I was sprawled out in this hallway right running to the studio.
Yes.
And I know you came around the corner and jumped into action, landed, but not to my rescue. I want you to share that tale.
Well, there were other people there rescuing you.
Well, I wouldn't say they rescued me. They kind of said, what are you doing on the floor?
You hurt your shoulder, didn't you?
I did. I did. It's dislocated my shoulder. But, you know, we don't hear about that. We don't hear what you did
or didn't do. I, as you so delicately put it, grabbed the script out of your hand, jumped over you, and went into the studio and did the, what was it, an update or something?
A cut-in or something. Yeah. I don't know. But you jumped into action. It was very commendable of you. Thanks for attending to my ailment. Oh,
well,
boy.
I was concerned.
Yeah, I get it. You kind of waved at me as you jumped over my body. Anyway. Okay. And I remember one day, it was like one of those days where it was like 70 degrees one day, and the next day it was like 15 degrees, and they had the tornado in Owensboro.
Oh,
and they sent us over there, and it was freezing cold, and we were standing in front of this demolished apartment building.
Oh, yeah, it was so sad, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, some of those things. And I know we've done all these telethons, too, for, the food drives and...
Petersburg tornado. Owensboro,
And, of course, the Jerry Lewis telethon. Now, in the early days of that, it was like a 24-hour deal, wasn't it?
It was. And I always got a shift I never liked. You always got a better shift.
I think you got the morning shift, like the 5 a.m.
Yeah, like I got up every morning at 5 a.m.
to 9 a.m. shift. Yeah, those were the days when we would work all day on that. And they would have local bands in and everything.
And all remotes. The food. Remember the food?
Oh, yeah. That was. And remember the Wienermobile showed up? The Oscar Mayer Wienermobile?
You were so excited about
that. Yeah, I had to go out there and interview the driver of the Wienermobile. Oh, yeah, some great memories. And parades. We were in parades.
Oh, yeah, a lot of parades. Yeah.
And we had, of course, we always had the worst positions in the parade. for some reason that we would like to be at the back of the parade. When people had left, we would come by the reviewing stand. People would be gone. They'd be picking up their coolers and, oh, and their chairs. Oh, gosh. We're just having a great time here talking to Ann Comus on 2 Main Street. Now, the Race for the Cure, you got involved in. How did you get involved in that?
Well, Steve Langford, who was general manager of the station at the time, asked me if I'd be interested. Yes, I would. Mary Beth Owen was executive director and co-founder of the race coming here. And I have to tell you, you know, we get to do a lot of things in the community that, you know, touch us in some way or another. You know, in all the years we've been in this business, we've been asked to do charity events, but nothing has really ever touched me like Race for the Cure did. And not just because I think it was women. It was just that this was somehow so incredibly, I don't know what the word I'm really looking for is, but it was just touching. The people I got to meet, the effort that was put in to bring something like that to Evansville, Indiana, was unbelievable. I got to be in on the ground floor to watch these people work, and I was overwhelmed. Then I got to meet the survivors, and that was just the icing on the cake. I don't think anything has ever touched me as deeply as those women and men and the people who work so hard to bring it here. Nothing has ever touched me like that.
You got giving me goosebumps because I remember those scenes with all the survivors gathering at the stage there at Eastland Mall.
Yes,
all
walking
these women.
To the
oh. And then the people would walk in memory of people that died from cancer. I mean, it was it's still a very emotional event.
It is. You know, one of the things when we were at Eastland Mall, there was a lady who, you know, I had a lot of breaks as MC of that, you know. So when everybody was sent off to walk or run in the race, I sat on the stage because I still had announcements to make, even if it was to a parking lot that was completely empty. One lady sat with me the whole time, and we would look at each other in amazement and say, how is it that we don't have this? How is it that this has escaped us? And, you know, it's tearful to think, you know, there are young women out there with young children, young families, and you know, here we are. What's the difference? Why? I mean, it, kind of a survivor's guilt, I guess. My friend, several years later, was diagnosed with breast cancer. My friend who sat on that stage with me and wondered why developed breast cancer and died from it. And, you know, it was something that I will never forget. I love her to this day. I think of her and several other women, but there's just something special about that moment that we sat there and talked and wondered why. And that made it, brought it even more closer to home.
Well, it still is an incredible event. I mean, I think one time they released doves in the
yes.
air.
Yes, oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they have all the balloons and then the unfurling of the flag. The department store there as the people walked by. And along the route, you know, cheerleaders would cheer along,
yeah.
cheer the crowd as they walked along. I mean, it just was incredible. And all the vendors were there and people donating and yogurt and fruit. And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, just an amazing event. Well, anyway, that's something that I know you're very proud of.
I am proud definitely. Of him, worked with them.
Well, coming up, Ann and I are going to share our memories of local TV weather icon, the late Marcia Yockey, and how Ann and her husband, Joe Rhodes, gave Marcia a final flight over her beloved Newburgh. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Our guest is Ann Comus, retired TV news anchor at WFIE. And it's been nearly 20 years after Marcia Yockey died.
Is that right?
Yeah. And viewers still ask both of us about Marcia. Now, first of all, I'll start us off with a description of Marcia for those younger folks who may have heard about the Weather Girl but didn't see her on the air. How would you describe Marcia Yockey?
You're going to have to help me with this one. I think she was absolutely brilliant. You know more of her history than I do. A chemist during the war. I mean, I can't say enough about her. And a tough lady. I mean, nobody stepped on her toes. But she had one overwhelming problem. She drank a lot. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, remember her more for that than anything. But she wore a ponytail. Jeff can imitate her probably better than anyone I know because she kind of quacked when she...
Kind of a cackle.
Cackle, yeah.
Screech, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, the pigtailed princess of late night TV. I think that's how I described her one time.
At a roast or something like that.
Yeah, Marcia was one of those unique TV people that I don't know if she would make it today or not. Well, she might. I don't know. She's so unusual.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's so...
But she'd have to use the technology of today. And I think that might... Well, but, you know, she was perfectly capable of doing it if she wanted to.
Right, right. Yeah, Marcia would have... she had a large map with a kind of a plexiglass glass surface on it.
Right.
And she would have these markers and do all of the markings mm-hmm. on there about the cold fronts and the... Mm-hmm. All the other good stuff that would, when all the and all the temperatures from everywhere in the North America
and the isobars and the
that's the word I was looking for, the isobars.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it was unbelievable.
And she would go to the weather service. We had a weather service at the airport.
Yeah, National Weather Service, right?
At Dress Regional then it was mm-hmm. called, mm-hmm. and she would go to the weather service, and then in the evening she'd get the latest information, and then drive back. I'm sure at an excessive speed from the airport to the station.
In a sports car of some sort.
And get back to the station like at 9:30 or 9:40.
Or late. Yeah, more like that. Because you start getting worried. Is she going to make it?
Yeah.
Is she had an accident?
Where is she at?
Where is she?
And she would rush into the studio, and then she would create the map. And Lord help the studio person who didn't have the map cleaned.
Oh, no kidding. You could hear her all the way in the newsroom when that...
She would explode. And that's not an exaggeration if that map was not clean. But anyway, she would... And she had probably one of the longest weather casts in the country.
Yeah, just ask the sports guy.
Yeah, Mike Blake would follow Marcia on the late news, and he's always looking at his watch and the clock, afraid she's going to cut into his sports time. So that was kind of a running feud between the two. And I think sometimes she would just kind of pad a little bit.
Yeah, depending on how he was looking at his watch.
Yeah, just to see him sweat over there. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, just one of those unique people. And like you said, she worked for the Weather Service, too.
Right.
And she was a pilot.
Right. Helicopter and airplane.
Yeah. She was a whirly bird.
That's right. Whirly girl. Wasn't that what they call them?
Yeah. I think it was like whirly girl. Mm-hmm. She had a little medallion, and she was like number 100 or something like that.
That's right. That's right.
She was very proud of that. During the war, I think she wanted to be a doctor, a physician.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, she told me one time, and then the war happened, and she went to Bossy High School, and I think she wanted to go get a medical degree, but the war happened, and then she started working in the war industry, and I think it was out there by the airport, and of course they made those P-40s.
Wasn't it by, at the Whirlpool plant?
Yeah, I think right there, mm-hmm. and of course they made P-47s at what is now the former Whirlpool plant. These are the war planes. And she got to meet the pilots and everything, and she got it all involved in aviation and weather. And she told some great stories about that. Oh, yeah. they loved her. And talk about her plane.
Well, I don't really know much about it, except the
Piper?
The Piper Cub. The last – it had no no radio, did it? What was it?
No, it didn't have any navigational equipment, I don't think.
I think she – I don't know how she flew that thing. But mm-hmm. I do know what you and I got a call to the newsroom. This was after she had retired, that a farmer was clearing a field and found a plane.
She landed and left it there?
Isn't that the story?
Well, yes.
I got a ride into town with somebody else. And
well, I took I think I only took one flight with her. She flew me, Mike Blake, Bill Barnhill, and I think I think that's it. It flew us down to Kaintuck Territory, which was a kind of a western village down by Kentucky Lake. It's no longer there. And we were doing a promo down there. So she flew us down there in their plane. And to navigate, she would fly low through these little towns, and we would have to read the water towers to find out where we were at. Oh, there's Seabree. I guess I better bank left or something. And she'd fly up a little higher, and then we'd buzz this little town again and read the water towers. And then we flew into this, had like a little airstrip down there. But all it was like a big, it's a concrete lane, basically, built on grass. So we landed on that, and of course we went off of the concrete.
Of course.
And we had to get out and lift the plane back up on the concrete to get out of there.
And that was the last time.
Oh, yeah, I think that was the last journey on that. But, I mean, I felt very safe with her, and she was very, it was no nonsense when she was flying the plane. And one of the comments that we would always hear about Marcia was, oh, she's drunk on the air. No, no, no. She never drank before she went on the air. Afterward?
Yes.
She would have a cocktail or two.
Yes.
But anyway, she was very much a professional when she was on the air.
I thought so, too. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear you say that. And the airplane, I think she was very serious. Mm-hmm. When she was in a car, I'm not so sure how serious she was, but the plane, yes.
But she had a certain affinity with pilots because they would call her because they're like flying to someplace, and
right.
She would give them a...
And she knew exactly what to tell them.
Yeah, she'd give them a personal weathercast on the air
right.
if they were flying to from Evansville to Keokuk, Iowa or someplace. Yeah. Well, you're going to run into this. You stop over here, and stop in Peoria.
Yeah.
It's going to be raining there, and then you're going to get into some nice weather.
Yeah.
But she knew all of that
She
stuff.
Did. For those people who never saw her, it was worth seeing one weathercast, because mm-hmm. it's like nothing you'll ever see again.
And as we remember Marcia Yockey, her 4th of July weathercast. Can you explain that?
I cannot.
It was strange. It was bizarre because, the weather is usually live, because you want to know what's going on right now.
Right.
Marcia would tape her 4th of July weathercast in the afternoons, and then we play it in the evenings at the 10 o'clock news. I think she moved around.
Oh,
I think
okay.
people invited right. her to their 4th of July parties. And I can see why, definitely. But she would, and Marcia was into her 50s, maybe early 60s, and she would wear, what would she wear, Anne?
Bikini.
She'd wear a bikini when she would give the weather at these events. And that was interesting. And, but there was only one person who could do that and
really?
Pull that off, Marcia Yockey.
That's exactly right.
Yes. And, of course, you live in Newburgh, mm-hmm. and Marcia loved Newburgh.
Oh, loved it. Mm-hmm.
That
Absolutely loved
was
it.
Her adopted home. And she grew up in Evansville. And she lived near Bossy High School.
That's right. She did. Yeah.
So I think she walked to school.
Was it Bayard Park?
Was it Lance Circle around
there?
Oh,
maybe.
Somewhere around there, around Bossy High School in that neighborhood. And then she moved to Newburgh, and she was kind of like the ambassador of Newburgh.
Well, people really took care of her in mm-hmm. Newburgh. I mean, I think we learned that very quickly in those declining years about people would make sure she got home safely. It warms your heart to know that people cared about her so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, she cared about other people too. She would go to the Wendell Foster Center.
And remember one time we went over there, it was Christmas time. She had all of her furniture pushed back against the wall, and the whole room was full of gifts, Christmas gifts, to take to the kids at the Wendell Foster Center. And I think that she was going to a hospital where kids were going to have to spend Christmas. You remember that?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, she, and that's when you'd see her tear up.
Mm-hmm.
She'd come back after visiting the Wendell Foster Center, and there'd be tears in her eyes because she loved those kids. And they loved when Marcia would show up, they would just squeal
with happiness,
with delight.
Yes.
Because she brightened their day and
dance. She'd get out and dance.
Oh,
with
my
them
gosh. Do the chicken dance.
Yeah. She loved it.
Yeah, that the Germania Manicor. She was famous for the chicken dance there and many other things. Oh, yeah. And, of course, we cannot close the chapter on Marcia without talking about Lady Godiva.
Oh. Now, that was the Newburgh Parade, wasn't it?
Yes, mm-hmm. Newburgh Parade. She was on a horse, and she wore this
bodysuit
and looked like she was naked.
Naked.
And she had like a long wig.
Mm-hmm.
And was riding this horse in the parade. And of
Where
course,
are these ideas of hers came from?
Can you imagine if that happened now with social media?
Oh, my Lord.
It would be a million hits on that.
But, you know, nobody seemed to complain. They all laughed about it and thought it was the greatest thing in the world. People wouldn't do that now.
No, they wouldn't do that. And that doesn't really surprise me that she would do that.
No.
We kind of expected the unexpected from Marcia.
Exactly.
And she always delivered.
Oh, yeah.
And she took some fantastic trips, too. I know she went on the safari in Africa. And she went to Asia. And I think Australia.
And Panama. Remember she took the cruise through the Panama Canal? I remember that one.
Oh, yeah. Just a fascinating lady. I mean, to know her and just to be around her was certainly definitely a treat. And, Marcia. Just amazing. Now, okay, we're going to talk about the final flight. This was after she died.
Mm-hmm.
Was this one of her wishes?
No, not that I know of.
Would have to happen to her remains?
Right. No, it was not. Marcia died, and this is how it came about. You know, you always wonder what you can do for the family or the person who has passed on. So I had this bright idea in the shower that Marcia had spread the ashes of her mother and father from her plane over the Ohio River in Newburgh, in the Newburgh area. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if Joe could do that, since he's a pilot.
Right, your husband.
My husband, Joe Rhodes, could do that for Marcia. So, as any wife would do, I didn't pick up the phone and call him. I called Kay, who was Marcia's executor, friend, and the person taking care of her arrangements. Mm-hmm. Kay thought it was a great idea, that Marcia would have loved it. So then I called Joe. Joe said, "Ann, I've never done anything like that before."
And this was I think she died in the year 2000.
Okay.
I think it was. Yeah, okay. And now we pick up the story now. Marcia had been in failing health and
dementia.
Yeah, and she had shingles and
it was
rough. But you know, before she really had some serious health problems, we had like a kind of a farewell thing for her downtown.
That's right.
At the old Jackson House Hotel.
Right. And she was pretty with it then. I mean,
she was.
But she really went down I think started slowly going down after that. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I remember the people she stayed with. I think were kind of her caretakers or toward the end.
And they really were great.
They were, but they limited her to one drink. I think at that
they started watering down her.
Yeah,
yeah.
She'd always want another drink. No. Yeah, anyway, okay. So
I have this great idea.
She died in the year 2000.
And I tell Joe, we're going to, if it's okay with you, we'll spread Marcia's ashes from the plane. And Joe said, I've never done that before. So he began getting instructions on how to do it. So, you know, there was her funeral, but she had not been cremated yet, which was her wishes to be cremated. So it was several weeks after the funeral that Kay called and said, I've got her ashes back. Can you come by the house and pick them up? Sure. So I go by Kay's house, and Kay had her basement is just like a museum of all the things and travels that she's done. So I get this tour, and my mind is just racing with all the things Kay has done and the stories she's sharing with me. And the whole while, I'm carrying around Marcia's ashes, which are in not some elaborate vase, which is what I somehow assumed they would be in,
mm-hmm.
but they're like in a Tupperware container. And I'm just carrying around, so they in the course of all this have just become part of my body. I'm not even thinking about Marsh anymore. I'm amazed at what the tour I'm getting and all that. Mm-hmm. Now I've got to meet Joe for dinner, and I'm late. So I put Marsha in the car. I rush to dinner, and I'm, you know.
Marsha remains.
In the Tupperware. I call her Marsha. Yeah. And I got to dinner, and I'm so glad I made it. Joe's waiting for me. We have dinner, and it hits me. Oh, my Lord, I've left Marsha in the car. By herself. What if someone has stolen her remains? I mean, you know how you get these ideas and you start worrying. I said, Joe, we've got to go. Pay the bill. I've got to go get my car.
You know what? So to live with that.
I'm leaving. And of course, there are three or four people that I know in the lobby that want to stop and talk. And one of them being our news director at the time. Uh-huh. And I said, I can't talk. I got to go get Marsha. I just was in a panic.
Oh, my.
I go out. Luckily, you know, Marsha and the Tupperware are still there. I go home. So the next day, we're going to spread Marsha's ashes. It's a beautiful day. And Joe explains to me that when I open...
So you go to the Evansville Airport?
Yes.
Evansville Regional Airport.
And get in the plane, our little plane.
Okay.
That we rented. Mm-hmm. And he explains to me that, you know, you open a door, it's kind of like a, lack of a better term, a gull wing on
mm-hmm.
a plane.
Yeah.
And that the wind, Ann, will take that and hold the door open. So you don't have to hold the door. Okay. All right. And then reach out as far as you can. And dump the ashes.
So he researched this?
He researched it. He had it down. I mean, as always, very serious.
Go to the internet? I mean, where did you get that information?
Well, I think one of the instructors out.
Oh, had done that before?
Probably done it.
Okay.
So anyway, we get to the Ohio River over Newburgh. Kay is appropriately sitting on Marsha's bench. Remember the bench that was donated from Marsha? She's sitting on Marsha's bench. And I'm a little nervous about this because it suddenly dawned on me, I've never done anything like this before.
So I'm going to set the stage here. This is the Newburgh Riverfront.
Newburgh Riverfront.
Beautiful day.
Beautiful day.
So Kay, her friend, is on at the bench.
To watch.
With probably some other people, too.
I don't know if anybody else
was
there.
Really?
I didn't see anybody else. Just
So this
just
wasn't
Kay.
An announced event where people were gathered
no,
or anything.
No,
this was
no,
a private.
No.
Okay.
Thank
All
thank
right.
Good.
So
thank
you're
goodness.
Flying over the Ohio River.
Yes.
Okay.
I've got the wind has taken up the door, and I'm leaning out, and I'm about to dump Marsha's ashes. Sorry. And I see a boat directly below us.
A pleasure boat?
A pleasure boat okay. with people in it having a great time. And I'm thinking, I can't dump their ashes on top of these people. And Joe, who is virtually in a stall, I mean, it wasn't quite a stall. We don't have that much time. So I really could not defend these people from what about to happen. So I said, Joe, I can't. Now, he's got a hold of my shirt or sweater, whatever it was I was wearing at the time.
So you wouldn't fall out.
So that I wouldn't fall out because I'm leaning that far over. Anyway, he said, dump the ashes, and dump the ashes. But there's people down there. I can't dump the ashes. Well, finally, we got just a little past them. I dumped the ashes. Well, from the plane, you cannot tell how well that went. And now that it's done, and the ashes are out, and I'm left with this thing, I'm wondering, my phone is not ringing. Kay hasn't phoned me. Did this all look terrible? You know, I mean, you know, in your mind, you have this idea of this steady stream of ashes floating gently to the river.
Right, right.
So I give it a few minutes. I still don't hear from her. I try calling Kay. No answer. I try calling Kay. Still no answer. I'm like, oh, it must have been terrible.
Oh.
So we get back to the airport. Well, a lot of the ashes apparently were on the side of the plane. Not a lot, but some of them. I finally got a hold of Kay, and she said, I couldn't take your calls, you know, but it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, thank you, Marsha. thank you. So that was Marsha's farewell journey. And I have to tell you, David, for it was a journey, and it was exactly the way she would have wanted. It was helter-skelter, but beautiful at the end.
Oh, I think that's a fitting tribute to Marcia. And, you know, I'm sure she was cackling somewhere.
Yeah. And anxious to hit those people in that boat.
Oh, yes. Oh, you should have got them. You should have got them. Fly lower, Joe.
But, you know, as much as I think both of us loved her, it was an honor to be able to do that.
Oh, it was. So Marcia has definitely been a part of our lives. I mean, I credit much of my success in broadcasting to Marcia because people would watch the news.
So they could watch her?
Watch her, and I just happened to be on the news.
Well, I don't think that's true, but maybe a little bit.
Well, I do credit her with, I guess, giving me some exposure to the tri-state.
You know, David, your success is because you were always honest. You were always, I mean, the reputation of national news anchors now is so bad. That would never have happened with you. And, I mean, that's a credit to you. You were a great success.
Well, Ann, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And you read that very well. I wrote that for you. No. Thank you so much. Our guest has been Ann Comas, retired TV news anchor, who has gone down memory lane with us. We're learning all kinds of things. And always good to see you. And I look forward to our next anchor summit, which others may call lunch. Again, thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thank you.
This is 2 Main Street on WNIN-FM, presented by Evansville Regional Airport.